America's working class has been cheated. That is an assertion.
Open border coordinate.
That's a Koch brothers proposal.
And the Democrats jumped right on board with the corporatists. They got in bed with Wall Street, military-industrial complex, the fossil fuels, Silicon Valley. And now look what happened to the country. We have the biggest income disparity since the Gilded Age. Bigger than that, there's more.
Expanded trade has thrown the working class into much more competition than they experienced before trade with lower wage countries took off.
What I can say is that as a country, we have to make a different set of choices because the choices we've made have hurt working people.
Congressman, because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it! My life has value!
Hello, and welcome to another Institute for Sound Public Policy podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Lin, and we have an amazing show in store for you today. If you are curious, like me, about what's going on along our Texas border as millions of immigrants have poured across it since the Biden administration took power, you're in for a real treat. Over the weekend, I had the opportunity to sit down with Todd Benzman and Sheena Rodriguez, two Texans heavily engaged in not only recording what is happening, but also doing yeoman's work to push back against it. Todd Benzman is the Center for Immigration Studies Texas-based Senior National Security Fellow. He's the author of Overrun, How Joe Biden Unleashed the Greatest Border Crisis in U.S. History, and America's Covert Border War, The Untold Story of the Nation's Battle to Prevent Jihadist Infiltration. Now, prior to joining the Center for Immigration Studies in August of 2018, Todd led Homeland Security intelligence efforts for 9 years in the public sector. Benzman's body of work with policy and intelligence operations is founded on more than 20 years of experience as an award-winning journalist covering national security topics with particular focus on the Texas border. Benzman holds a master's degree from the Naval Postgraduate School, Center for Homeland Defense and Security. His thesis was entitled, The Ultramarathoners of Human Smuggling Defending Forward Against Dark Networks That Can Transport Terrorists Across American Land Borders. A mouthful. He also holds a master's degree from University of Missouri School of Journalism and an undergraduate degree in journalism from Northern Arizona University. Sheena Rodriguez is the president of Alliance for a Secure Texas. Earlier this year, she testified before the House Subcommittee on Immigration and Citizenship about child trafficking along the southern border. She is a wife and homeschooling mother who began her activism in the pro-life movement by serving several years as a volunteer counselor at a local crisis pregnancy center. Since 2021, she has focused her efforts on raising awareness of the negative consequences of a porous border and views border-related issues as an extension of the pro-life movement. When not at the border, Sheena can often be found at the Texas Capitol attempting to influence legislation to help fortify Texas. The Alliance for a Secure Texas also strives to help educate everyday Texans so they can become engaged on the grassroots, state, and local levels. This includes helping research and educate on constitutional action items. By doing so, Sheena and Alliance for a Secure Texas hope to combat the negative consequences of the relaxed border policies impacting every Texan and every American, for that matter. One final note, we had a camera failure during the shoot, and as a result, we had to go with using just one camera angle as opposed to three. So the visual might be a little monotonous, but the audio is perfect and the content is exhilarating. So, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy the show. Sheena, Todd, great to have you guys here at the Institute for Sound Public Policy for about 45 minutes.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Super excited.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, you guys are a long way from home here in Washington, D.C. Great to have you here for the weekend. But boy, the whole country wants to know what is going on in Texas. So I thought I'd ask, start with you, Todd, get a 500-foot view of what's going there, and then ask you the same thing, Sheena, and then we'll get into some real specifics and if you describing what you how you feel the crisis is impacting the state of Texas and the country and what you're doing to fix it.
Absolutely.
Great. So Todd, go ahead.
Well, I think that it's obvious by now that the southern border is in the midst of probably the greatest escalating spike of the entire three-year-long mass migration crisis, which itself is an incredible historic spike. We're going into an era of like a new norm of an extremely high benchmark of people crossing in family groups and unaccompanied minors, singles. And the reason why we're having this incredible surge, and I believe it's a permanent surge, at least until there's a change at the White House, if there is because the administration thought that it could say we're going to be tough at the border and that everybody would be scared away.
Mm-hmm.
But that actually the way it works is they hear a new policy of a tough policy, and then they send a few vanguards out to test it. And those vanguards all found that they were being let in. Just like before, they send the selfies back and they talk in the chat rooms about like, well, they let us in. And just like before, nothing bad happened. It took a month or two to spread across the globe. That good word has spread everywhere to every corner of every nation on the planet. And so the entire world is uprooting and on their way to take advantage of this incredible opportunity for them to just get in. It's really not much more complicated than that. We are letting them in. And when you let them in, everybody behind them wants to be let in too. And so it's a self-propelling cycle of heightening, escalating numbers. And that's where we are. That's where we're going to be for the rest of the Biden term.
Wow, that is a pretty pessimistic, Todd, at the end of the day.
It's just realistic, but I mean, it was predictable and predicted. I mean, I wrote this exactly like it would happen.
Now, how long has it been since you wrote the book?
Well, I wrote the book, the book was published in February of 2023, but the end of Title 42 came in May.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was just a matter of talking to a lot of migrants and knowing how they think and how they decide whether to pull the trigger on staying home or leaving for the border. And so it was really obvious what they were going to do. They were going to see, they just wanted to know, are they going to be tough with us or not? And they found out that we're just letting everybody in. So, like, it just naturally followed. This isn't brilliant predictive prognostication on my end. It was just really simple, easy. Anybody could have figured this out if you just saw them let in.
They just you're stating the obvious.
Right. And so there was a pause briefly while they were kind of waiting for the first vanguards to cross in and test the waters. The waters were really great. And so now everybody's jumping in for that swim.
Wow. So Sheena, you know, Texan born and raised like Todd, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think that we focus at Alliance for a Safe Texas, we don't just focus along what's happening along the physical border, southern border, but also the negative consequences thereafter, mm-hmm. right? And I think we're starting to see an advancement, you know, going exactly what along with what Todd just said, if you incentivize it, they will come, right? And so what we're starting to see is people waking up to the incentivizing factors on the city and county levels with some of the ordinances and socialistic style type programs that is starting to incentivize them, because they're not staying along the border. The thousands that are coming over right now as we speak are not going to stay in Brownsville, Roma, La Jolla, Eagle Pass, or El Paso. Most of them are going to continue throughout the state of Texas into the various areas, and of course, even further into the interior. And so if you have these policies that are incentivizing it, especially in the schools right now, people are fine. How long have you been talking about this? How long have I been talking about it with the schools and seeing that, people are starting to see it now. And your taxes and our taxes and our property taxes in Texas. We just had a whole special session about property taxes. Well, I hate to give people even more pessimistic news, but it's not going to make a lick of a difference when you factor in the fact that, like, for example, in HEB, ISD, Independent School District, where I am, we're now facing nearly a $1 billion with a B additional bond on.
Really?
Yes. And we are a, even though we live in a suburban area, we are by no means one of the larger metro, school systems. So I think that that's the other thing. We were just talking about the homeless population in the Metroplex areas all throughout. So I live in North Texas, so quite literally hundreds of miles away from the border and far removed, traveling in the hill country and all over various areas throughout Texas, just Texas alone. And people are really starting to see the impacts already. And that was just from the population that's come in over the last over two years. So imagine now with this other influx that is going to continually stream over. It's terrifying.
It is terrifying. When I was in the McAllen area, Texas, along the Rio Grande, I asked a Border Patrol agent, you know, what is the apprehension rate? And at that time, he said about 20,000 a week along the entire Rio Grande Valley sector. So that's the whole southern border of Texas. And now we're hearing where several thousand are coming through just one spot in a day. This is crazy. So, Todd, what are the numbers here?
Right. So in recent weeks, we're back up into the 10,000 a day range. We had one day a few days ago from the day that we're recording this that was over 14,000. These are really record breaking out of, all imagination kind of numbers. I'll just remind you, a few years ago, somebody asked Jay Johnson, the former DHS secretary, what's a crisis number to you? And he said, man, if I wake up and I hear that there's more than 1,000 a day apprehended along the border, I'm going to have a bad day. And that is a major crisis for us. So that gives you a little bit of a contextual benchmark for what 14,000 a day is. But I mean, in fairness, over the course of the last 3 years, it's been more in the neighborhood of 7,000 a day for years now. So only seven times what a crisis is. Wow. But we're out of that. That's the good old days now. We're going to be looking at 10,000 and up from here on out. The numbers that are coming through are just astronomical. To give you an idea, we typically have about 200,000 a month apprehensions at that border. And it's been like that for, 16, 18 months straight. 200,000. Think about three giant football stadiums filled to the rafters coming in a four-week period, right? It's a city coming in every single month. The numbers that right now are coming through the Darien Gap, which mm-hmm. is way down in Panama,
And that's the Colombian Panamanian border, correct? Or the
yeah, it's called the Darien Gap. Mm-hmm. It's a bottleneck where people from around the world cross through. For decades, the most that ever came through the Darien Gap in a year was 7,000, 8,000.
In a year,
under 10, we have 350,000 right now this year. Okay. Last month, we had 85,000 counted by the Panamanians in 1 month. That's eight times the annual norm in a single month. This year, this month, right now, we're talking here in the late September, it's going to be well in excess of 100,000 crossing through the gap. All of them are headed for us right now. You ain't seen nothing yet in the last 3 years compared to what we're about to get hit with.
You know, Kevin, if I can, I said almost 2 years ago, by the time that Americans wake up to how bad this really truly is, it's going to be too late. And I fear that we are, if we're not already there, it's coming. Like, it really is. When, if you talk to any, and I'm sure you could verify this, any good Border Patrol agent under normal circumstances would tell you that, because we're talking about apprehensions. Those are the encounters, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that are actually documented. Simultaneously, I was getting messages from my CBP friends down there along the border saying, and also some officials down there in Kenny County, who, as this flood was arriving in Eagle Pass, guess what else was rising up? I saw footage from Normandy, which is in kind of the in-between area leading right up to Kenny County. So the smuggling, those who are trying to actively not be encountered is also simultaneously going up. So
they're called runners.
Yes.
They're running.
Your gotaways. And so any CBP officer would tell you that on a good day, they maybe encounter 20 to 30% of what's coming over. So
these numbers you're talking, several thousand, that's represents probably 20-30%.
Those are the ones that we know. Those are the ones we know about, but they're somewhere in the order of, so if we're looking at 14,000 a day, let's say 10 to 14,000 a day going forward. Those are the ones that a Border Patrol agent laid hands on and processed in. Mm-hmm. What Sheena's talking about are the runners, where we just saw their footprints in the sand and nobody got caught, or a drone
caught there, or
they pinged on a camera or whatever. And then they count those up and send them to headquarters. Those we typically have 60 or 70,000 more a month.
And that's just what we know of. So when we're talking like in Texas, we have Operation Drawbridge that has been in place for quite some time. Mm-hmm. So like where Border Patrol sets up the cameras, so they estimate, like somebody will literally watch the game cam footage and say, that's maybe 100 that crossed through that ranch, right? That we're estimating, or like from what Todd said, from the footprints that we can make out. And that's what I was talking about, like in Normandy, that I just saw recent footage of the trails, the people coming through there, which is terrifying because they're the ones that are actively trying to avoid law enforcement. And so that's why this is kind of important too, is that it's not just like, these are the ones that Todd just referenced to are the ones that want to get caught. What we're seeing under the bridge, and it used to be under the bridge in Del Rio. Now we could say under the bridge in Eagle Pass. But imagine as that number is going up, so is the ones that don't want to be encountered.
Wow. I want to delve more into some of these numbers, because you said, well, this is a city. Well, I come from a city of 55,000. That's where I'm living now. None of these people.
Mm-hmm. Right. Breakfast hour, man.
None of these people are bringing highways with them, roads, sewage systems, water systems, schools. All of this has to be provided. And you mentioned, Sheena, the billion-dollar bond, that it's, is it your county or
that's
state?
My ISD. So that's
your ISD.
In Texas, we have independent school districts, and so which is kind of different than some other states. But in my, I live right in between Dallas and Fort Worth, right? So I was a graduate of Trinity High School, which is pretty nationally known, but it's still a relatively, it's by no means is this an independent school district that is like of Dallas or Houston, right? Mm-hmm. But we have a $1 billion with a B. We just built an additional new elementary school expanded the middle school, and now we are wanting to expand and rebuild several other elementary schools and additional elementary schools. And I'm going to say this too. I was just working in Fredericksburg, Texas, which is Fredericksburg ISD, which is in the Hill Country of Texas, right? And what they're even facing, and this goes right along with what we're talking about, is now they're wanting to put in these clinics into the schools, not outside, onto the school buildings, to bring basically pediatric care and mental health care. And the reason why they are doing this, and it's on tape, they said is because of the influx of unaccompanied minors or of the undocumented students that has been absorbed and that is going to be expected to be absorbed. You're talking about a very small rural community in Texas that is wanting to put clinics. So again, when I just spoke in front of the school board and I said, if you incentivize it, they will come. When I talk about the socialistic programs, so you imagine that's literally pinging Fredericksburg ISD on the map, because now they're going to, just like Talk and Verify, they communicate. So they're going to say, oh, well, they're coming over. Where are we going to go settle? Well, if we go to Fredericksburg, Texas, they're putting in housing developments, right? Low-cost housing developments, which is going to attract this. And then they're putting in these incentivizations inside of the school districts. So it's going to be, again, if you incentivize, they will come. This is happening all across Texas in various areas where school boards are now voting this in, many of them citing the same reason, because of the large population of undocumented students that have been absorbed. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Wow, those are amazing numbers. And like you said, if you incentivize, they will come. Now, the implications, like you mentioned, they're not stopping at Texas. When I was in McAllen, I had the opportunity to sit with a rancher for a few hours. And he said the amazing thing is all these people coming across, and you know how close McAllen is to the border, all these people coming across, no one has shown up asking for work. Mm-hmm. They're, like you said, they're not staying there. So the implications for mayors, county commissioners, state governors, and assemblies is this is coming to a neighborhood near you. Are you prepared? And if you're not, what's the solution? I like some thoughts from you there. I mean, actually, before I even get into that, I mean, what is Texas doing right now? What can they do? What are they trying to do?
Do you want to start off with what?
Sure. I mean, Texas is spending about total of about $10 billion of its own money, state money, on a variety of programs. The main one is called Operation Lone Star, which is surging of state police and National Guard to the border to do several things. The main thing that they do is they fill the vacuum of emptied Border Patrol positions. Border Patrol has pulled out of the border to guard against drug trafficking and the rest of that, and they do processing duty inside these big processing centers. Mm-hmm. And that left, you know, hundreds of miles of border unguarded completely. So Operation Lone Star was designed to go fill those gaps, at least to be able to, you know, catch the criminal aliens and drug runners and weapons smugglers and sex traffickers and that sort of thing. Then the other thing that they're doing, and that's a very significant part of what they do. They got National Guard down there helping them spot for drug traffickers. The other thing that they have started doing more recently is what they call Operation Hold the Line, which is that they go to hot spots like Del Rio and Eagle Pass, and they denude the riverbank of cover of vegetation and replace that vegetation with barbed wire or concertina wire. And then, like linemen on an NFL line, they block the migrants physically from entering the country. They have to keep them down in the river until they turn around and go back to Mexico. That's proven incredibly effective up to a point, which is that, you know, at the end of the razor wire, where they stop, you know, the migrants figure that they can just go around them and find the Border Patrol, and then the Border Patrol lets them all in.
Wow. It's a game of whack-a-mole in that respect.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, you only have so many, you know, cops that you can just be like this, but you can see it. It's funny. You know, the police and the National Guard will follow laterally along the wire as the migrants walk in the water and hoping that they can wait out the cops so the cops won't let them in. Highly effective. They shut down all the illegal immigration down in the Matamoros, Brownsville area. Shut it down. Mm-hmm. They were doing okay in the Del Rio area until a few days ago when the immigrants, probably guided by NGOs or maybe the cartels, I'm not sure who told them, got 3,000 of them together and did a bonsai rush all at once and broke through the Texas blockade, just overran the Texans, and then found the green uniforms behind them and then got in.
Well, and CBP forces have been. I know that it was in the news just recently, and I think Governor Abbott showed some video of the CBP officers that were cutting the line, but honestly, that has been happening. There's been this battle, and I described it recently. I gave a quote, and this is how I've seen it for a few months now since Texas forces have really tried to take a stand, which is the federal takeover of a sovereign state. That's exactly how I see it, because the sovereign state of Texas, we are literally up against the world. And I'm not just saying this because I'm a proud Texan, which mm-hmm. I am, but we are literally up against our own federal government and federal agencies and up against the world. And Mexico, by the way, who is our biggest trade partner, that is all zeroing in on Texas. So we have very finite resources. Even though we are the eighth strongest economy in the entire world, we have very finite resources. We Absolutely. Only have so many boots on the ground, and sea wire is so easy to cut and move aside, and the migrants will throw their wet clothes on there. I've seen it so many times anyways. But we are trying, Governor Abbott is trying to do things. You mentioned $10 billion. That's just this past legislative session. So this is like a biennium, right? This is like mm-hmm. 2 years. Previously, just to put a little bit of historical context, yes, none of these issues that we're talking about are necessarily new, just because we are where we are. So geographically, Texas has always had to deal with some type of border security issues, but not to this magnitude. And to put it into context, before the Biden administration, the state of Texas spent about $800 million. Wow. So you compare $800 million to now $10 billion in 2 years, that's a significant, and prior to that, it was $800 million in collaboration with, that's why we had Operation Drawbridge, that's why we had all these different systems in place, because we were working collaboratively, not on its own. We were working collaboratively with DHS and ICE and the federal government as well. So it wasn't like Texas on its own. So this really kind of is, unfortunately, like the Alamo moment, but it feels like...
You know, the Texans are blocking them at the river, but the Biden Border Patrol are letting them in.
Off of that distinct wow. border. And
so you know how there's the two different policies at work right next to each other. And it's kind of an interesting thing. Texas is doing one other interesting thing that nobody ever really talks about is in order to coerce the Mexican states on the other side to collaborate on their side, the governor is doing 100% truck inspections on all commercial trucks crossing international bridges, and they'll literally just shut down international trade between the two countries until they see the Mexican troops start working it on their side.
Interesting.
So they just did that in Del Rio, and I'm sorry, in Eagle Pass. They shut down the bridge. They also shut down the rail freight bridge with inspections, meaning, you know, we're going to take about an hour per truck.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, for safety. And then, you know, before long, you've got 20-mile backlog into Mexico, and it drives everybody insane. Texas has been doing the shutting down international commerce for about a year now. They'll hit this bridge, then they'll open it, they'll hit another bridge, they'll hit another bridge. One time they had, they shut down six different bridges all at the same time, which really just shut down U.S. trade completely from Mexico.
Which is 100% legal and constitutional, which is one of the things I know Governor, because we're doing it on Texas roads.
Right.
And that's one of the things that when Governor Abbott, I think just 2 days ago or so, he reiterated that he had invoked the invasion declaration, which is one of the things that I personally had been advocating for, and we were working to pass some of those resolutions in various counties. We're up to over 40 different counties that have passed similar resolutions, and to encourage that and give him cover with that, to support that. But I think that was one of the biggest things that I wanted to see even more of, is by declaring this invasion, which is legal and constitutional, then we can enforce more things like that, like these inspections on Texas roadways under that declaration, that would mimic, it's not exactly the same, but it would help to mimic economic pressure like what President Trump did with his tariffs. So that's the ultimate goal. And because we are the eighth strongest economy in the entire world, and Mexico is our biggest trading partner, that's trying to apply that economic pressure. And I know that there's some talk too that we also have the biggest oil trade with Mexico as well. So it would be very interesting, and I would encourage Governor Abbott to possibly go down that path, because if we really want to apply some economic pressure legally and constitutionally, that's another way to be able to do it.
Wow. I'd like to talk, you mentioned that there are agencies. You mentioned federal government. You'd mention, I think, NGOs and volunteer agencies that are assisting in this. Who are these agencies, and what gives them the agency to do this?
I mean, there's literally hundreds and hundreds of agencies, large, small. I couldn't possibly name them all here, but there's some big ones, Catholic Charities, HIAS, the Methodist Church has one, the Lutherans have one. The Baptists have a bunch, and what they do, and then there's just like unaffiliated, just, you know, we want to help the migrants and refugees. These are, they're in business. I mean, they want to bring money in, and they are helping to manage the crisis in partnership with Border Patrol. They've been brought in, contracted with, hundreds of millions of dollars. Actually, it's in the billions of dollars in federal contracts are going out all over. It's unaccounted for completely at this point. There's no transparency whatsoever. There's no bidding that goes on. It's single. No bid contracts. They're just handed out on an emergency basis through FEMA, through the State Department, through DHS, and they're all getting just filthy rich off of this thing. They do a lot of the services that they provide are anywhere from just helping to facilitate the released illegals getting onto buses to get to their destinations, or airplanes to just like help them get out of town, to, you know, putting them up in hotels and housing complexes, to make sure that they're fed, clothed, that they've got medical treatment, that they have full dental, everything that any border crossing alien would ever need, for as long as they possibly need it, from the time they cross the border to months and even years afterwards.
And a lot of the NGOs that are operating here in Texas and in the United States are also collaboratively working with NGOs internationally. So, and communicating
that's
with
another
them.
Novel.
Yes. So it's very complex, and they're not just receiving money from the federal government, which is substantial and no end in sight, but they're also, in some cases, like in Texas, receiving money, and I'm sure in other border states, probably north and south, but especially along the south, receiving money from the city and the county level and the state level as well. And in the case of Texas, a lot of these NGOs that are like Endeavors, BCFS, Southwest Key, so many others, the Lutherans, so many.
Hundreds, maybe thousands of different organizations.
Absolutely. They are also working collaboratively for the care of our foster care children, or state foster care children.
Interesting.
I've often thought that it'd be great if there was some way to put an ETF on the stock exchange. I'd buy that thing, right? I'd have bought that about 2 years ago. I'd be rich by now.
Getting into the foster care. Now, Sheena, you've done a lot of work in the area of exploited children and minors coming across who, once they cross, we lose track. The government loses track of them. How is this happening? I mean, please describe that problem and tell us how it's happening.
Well, again, we're facilitating it. And we're not just facilitating, we're incentivizing it. It goes back to if you incentivize it, they will come, right? So like right now, I've seen some recent footage of, once again, a whole lot of men that are coming over with small children. And why is that? Because our policies are incentivizing it. Because they're saying, well, if you cross over with a child that's under this certain age bracket, you're pretty much guaranteed to be able to stay. And it could be 20 different people that are coming over to claim being related to that one child, and they get to come, right? And then I know Todd's talked about the forced separations, family separations, and I've seen that as well, at least what appears to be that as well, which is if we separate or if we send these older teens or these, you know, 13 and up, let's say, we send them over, they have a higher probability of being able to be let in if they come in as an unaccompanied minor. But then a lot of these children are being told, according to them, from the interviews that I've done with, and I testified about, was, you know, they've told me that they're being told by these women inside of these bodegas or facilities, which one could imagine is the NGOs. I can't verify that, but that's what we could imagine that as being, and who to ask for when they arrive here to the United States. And I think that's what's so interesting to me, and that's one of the most frustrating things. And I just had a few different meetings today working on some congressional level stuff, and we're trying to also attack this and address some of these issues from the state level, because I feel like this is possibly where we could attempt to try to address some of these issues. While everyone wants to point the fingers at HHS and ORR, and rightfully so, what a lot of people miss is that these NGOs are really the middleman. And you were there when I spoke recently at a conference, and I explained the money that's being made on all these different levels and the connections from the international down to the local, most local list of levels. But then in addition to that, it's a lot of these NGOs that are actually doing the quote unquote vetting for these sponsors. I've sat down with some of the NGOs that are operating there in the state of Texas, and I've asked them questions in there about their vetting process and everything, and how they're doing it and what systems that they use. And how they're verifying how these workers, are they trained on document fraud and things of that nature. And a lot of the responses conflicted with even just policy that's written in there, and then contradicted themselves. And this one in particular NGO, for example, had never previously had any prior experience with unaccompanied minors directly. They were called in to come and help other bigger ones like Catholic Charities before, but this was the first time that they had ever received any direct contracts. And yet they received billions of dollars this time around as soon as the Biden administration stepped into office with no bid contracts. And I think that one of the most frightening things is that Texas, not only do we encounter the most unaccompanied minors, but we also absorb, meaning that the number of unaccompanied minors released to sponsors that are living in the state more than any other state. California and Florida are number 2 and 3. So if we, and in some of the cases that have been happening over there in Florida, like the grand jury investigation that was done, that we actually just, it was just released, and actually I guess I can announce this right here on your show, that finally, just a few days ago, our state level sponsored letter by Representative Sam Kitzman was released and sent to our AG's office asking for a similar investigation in the state of Texas into the alleged trafficking cases of these unaccompanied minors into the state. And Florida's already done that. And a lot of the cases of what they found in Florida actually was right back brought into Texas. A lot of these children that were found to being trafficked in the state of Florida through their grand jury investigation actually was sent by NGOs based in Texas. And so that's why this is so important. And so we are never going to be able to address these issues if, number one, we do not address the incentivizing policies that are bringing them here. Mm-hmm. And then number two, not addressing the issues of actually, like Todd had referenced to earlier, the transparency. There's no communication whatsoever. I have so many different stories that I could tell you that I know we don't have time to get into today of the lack of transparency where HHS contracted facilities and these NGOs, both for and nonprofit, are laughing in the face of state and local officials for something as simple as a contract to even verify that the ages of the supposed children that are in these facilities. It's very disturbing on so many levels. And then in addition to that, that's when we're also seeing, again, the stress on the infrastructure, the stress on the schools, the stress on our EMS systems. You mentioned, heck, water. Water is so precious in Texas. And I'm all for, at this point, building a wall to the northern border of Texas and the southern border, because we're full. We turned the lights off. We're no longer, just no vacancy. Even something as simple as water, where we just don't have, even for our citizens, nevertheless, the children that are being absorbed, the families that are being absorbed, and that are settling into the various Texas areas. It's so disturbing. And if we want to actually address it, we cannot do so without doing those two things, addressing the policies that are incentivizing it and addressing the middleman, the NGOs that are operating.
It's hard to address the policies. Trump was doing it in his final year with Remain in Mexico. When unaccompanied minors came across, Border Patrol picked them up and put them right on the bridge back into Mexico. That's where they belong. Mexico is a modern oil state, perfectly capable of inviting international NGOs to come in and help take care of these kids. Let them be on Mexico. Mexico's got the funding, they've got the space, they've got the NGO support. There's no reason why unaccompanied minors should be coming into the United States. Push them back. Let the Mexicans take good care of them like they were before.
Well, and if I may really quick to add to that, most of the unaccompanied minors, if you look at the demographics, are older teens. Most of them that I've encountered are supposedly 16, 17,
military
near 18,
age.
Right? And most of them, again, if you look at the data that is publicly available, are males. So
half of the ones that I've met look like they're 25 if they're a man.
Yeah, they have more tattoos, more interested in tattoos than teddy bears.
I interesting.
Yeah, 17.
Wow.
And I'm just tall for my age.
and shaving it. And you had mentioned the water. You know, these are, you know, beyond these numbers have to be creating massive environmental concerns and issues. How would you address those? I mean, what do you notice this in the state of Texas?
In so many various ways. I mean, from the population growth, even in, for example, heck, in the DFW area, the Dallas-Fort Worth area, not only are we having busloads of people dropped into our community, just like everywhere else, where they're literally busing them in and leaving them on the side of the road, and then being absorbed into our homeless population, but also we were the number two spot for the Afghan refugees. So just being absorbed. So you talk about the resources that it's draining. Again, heck, now I just had my one of the elementary schools that I just referenced earlier that was just being built was actually my son's old baseball field. My son is now going on to play baseball in college. And every time I drive by it, I'm infuriated because I'm like that. I had so many memories on that field, but they just had to plow it over because of the overwhelming population growth that with no end in sight. The property taxes, right? The explosion in, I mean, the amount of infrastructure that is being, our hospitals, that is just being impacted. And then when you get into the rural communities, it's even worse. Now, living in a metroplex area, a lot of our water comes from the rural areas, right? And from our lakes and the dams that are created. But even in the rural areas where a lot of these facilities are open and housing unaccompanied minors, even in like Fredericksburg, they don't have the resource. They don't have the EMS. They don't have the infrastructure for all of these new low housing, low economic housing facilities that are being brought up for these large Pecos. Pecos had a massive, it's now on warm status and has been, but a massive unaccompanied minors EIS, the emergency influx shelter out there. There's no water out there in West Texas. It just doesn't exist. So that's where we even had where facilities were using non-potable water, which is terrifying if you know anything about that. It's literally like poisonous water that they were using because water just doesn't, it's precious. We just don't have it. The damage that I've seen along the physical border, I've documented so much of the piles of human waste and trash. The river is literally filled with, I've seen dead bodies floating down the river over there in Eagle Pass and getting hung up right there along the bridge where the cement pillars are. I mean, human feces, medications that these NGOs give them, condoms used and new, which are just filled with chemicals. I mean, it's absolutely disgusting. The smell is rancid everywhere that you go, and it's just piles and piles. I mean, there's so much. Heck, you just talked about exactly that, where even with right along the border, where we've had to the vegetation there, and the mussels. They're so worried about the mussels. Well, what about all the trash and the filth and the human waste that's in that river right there because of this crisis with no end in sight? It's nobody, they call them dump sites, basically just dump sites where people just dump. It's so, and it's horrible because especially along the Rio Grande River, it's beautiful. It's, you go to Del Rio, it's stunning. Mm-hmm. It's stunning. And it's just demolished. It's just utterly demolished.
Wow. Todd, any other thoughts on that?
Remind me of the original question.
The impact, I mean, all these numbers have to be having an impact on the environment. I mean, have you seen anything that would validate that?
Well, you know, I can expand and reiterate on what Sheena said and expand on it. For example, in Reynosa, Mexico, there are several very large migrant camps all along the riverbank there. Reynosa being across from McAllen. And when you go to these camps, they're ramshackle, you know, tarps and, you know, building materials and pieces of plywood and stuff. But on the riverbank, if you go out just beyond the perimeter of these, you can see trash piles 4 foot high tumbling down to the river, all the way down the river. They just throw their bags, their garbage, their diapers, their everything you can imagine in a regular, you know, household waste situation, tumbling down into the river. And there are multiples of those. You could see those anywhere there are these camps. You'll see this massive piles just tumbling down into the river. And then when it rains or when there's a mud slide, eventually, I guess everybody's hoping that it'll all just kind of go down into the river. There's a thing that immigrants do when they cross. You'll see this. They'll put a spare set of clothes in a trash bag.
Okay.
Tie it up, and then they'll swim across in the clothes they're wearing. The clothes they're wearing are to be discarded as soon as they get over there, because now you've got to be, you know, you don't want to be walking around in wet clothes. So they strip their clothes and put the dry ones on and then throw the bag away. And there are lots of places along the river where tens of thousands of migrants are doing this all in the same 1,000 yards or 2,000 yards. And so the very sensitive riparian habitat of a riverbank becomes completely matted, 2-3 feet high, where nothing can live. Everything only can suffocate underneath for as far as the eye can see of just this old clothing and trash and needles and everything that they were carrying. They just throw it in garbage. And so you have to wonder, you know, how that impacts local wildlife and, you know, for, you know, deer and, you know,
right.
There are all kinds of, you know, creatures that live down there, mm-hmm. including bears and mm-hmm. Bobcats and cougars. And, you know, it's very, the riverbank along the river Rio Grande is, in the areas is very,
it has to be rich,
it's
with wildlife.
Very rich, biodiverse. I'm not a biologist by any stretch, but I can tell you that you cannot walk along there and not figure that this had a terrible impact on all of the creatures that live there, that fly or walk or graze or are predators and all, everything there. Also, the, I'm going to just call it human waste. Mm-hmm. That is what Sheena mentioned is very definitely everywhere down there. There are thousands of thousands. There is a migrant camp that stretches for at least 2 or 3 miles long in Matamoros. And it's been there for 5 years. And it is packed with thousands and thousands of people who don't always go to the porta potties that are provided. Right. They're just down there in the river. Every morning they're down there in the river. And it is just not a coincidence that downstream from these camps is this invasive water hyacinth plant that 100% clogs every square foot of the river surface so that no sunlight gets through. And there is no oxygen down there. Nothing can live under these water hyacinth patches that just go
wow.
for thousands and thousands of yards. And it's just a coincidence that these all seem to be growing right where these massive camps are, where human beings are dumping this enriched nutrients of their trash into the water.
Crazy.
The hot water hyacinth problem is a major killer of fish and wildlife down there.
Well, and I think so, and then we have, especially in Texas, South Texas is so beautiful, and we have the most beautiful sunsets down there. But you have so many different populations. Like, I think what's always so interesting to me is that people say, well, why, you know, Governor Abbott needs to put alligators in the Rio Grande. And I get so frustrated because I'm like, alligators are native to Texas. They are in the Rio Grande. And why do even Texans not realize this? Because the population has been pushed out. You have the bears, the ocelots, so many other different animals that are native to that area that have been directly impacted. But that's just kind of like what Todd said. That's just along the Rio Grande. When you get into the interior, because remember, these people are not staying there. And we talk right. about the infrastructure in the interior and the impacts to the various different environments across Texas in these rural communities, in these rural areas. I mean, there really is. You cannot have millions upon millions upon millions of people coming from all over the world, descending onto, especially the Texas is unfortunately the hotbed for it, and then infiltrating upwards and either settling somewhere in Texas or beyond, and there not be a legitimate environmental impact. No one in their right mind could legitimately make the case that, like, yes, there's not going to be an impact on the infrastructure, on the wildlife, not just along the Rio Grande, but on the interior as well.
And let me just add one more, it's kind of anecdotal, but in recent months, there have been allegations against, like, say, the Texas Department of Public Safety that are doing the blocking at the river that, you know, this is a terrible thing to force people to stay in the river because they get dehydrated and the Texans are not offering them fresh bottled water. But if you just think about that for a second, that, you know, why would people who are trapped in a river gonna like die of dehydration? It's because everybody knows that water is unpotable. You should never drink it. You're probably more likely to get ill and maybe even seriously ill if you save yourself drinking that water, that poison water, but nobody seems to catch on to this sort of conundrum of, like, God, they're not giving us water. We're trapped in water. We're trapped in water, and they're not giving us water.
Wow.
And then where do those where do those water bottles go when after they drink
right
it?
Right into the
yeah, there you go. Well, I want to wrap up with one question. So how do you feel about New York City? It looks like Mayor Eric Adams, who was a proponent of sanctuary cities, is, you know, tapping out. And he's screaming uncle. They're saying they're full up. Governor Hochul just the other day said that the state of New York is full up. Don't come here. Do you, as Texans, kind of, in a way, take kind of a grim satisfaction that...
Yeah, you know, I got to admit it. But, you know, listen, a lot of attention goes to New York because it's the Big Apple, and there are a lot of people that live there. The ground truth, though, is that every single city in America is going through the same thing, but suffering in silence. They're not saying anything. Akron, Ohio, Lincoln, Nebraska, Middle America, the Dakotas, Wyoming, Montana, Nevada. There's no city in America that is not suffering exactly what they're suffering. You just never hear about it. But it's happening in every city and town in America, and it's going to get way worse now. Like I said earlier, you ain't seen nothing yet, because this wave, that's human wave that's coming now, is going to dwarf even these historic waves that we've already sort of weathered that have come in. This is just not even over by half.
Wow.
And it's not New York. It's everywhere.
Wow. Well, coming to a city near you,
it's already there. It's already there.
Well, Sheena Rodriguez, Todd Benzman, I want to thank you both so much for joining me today. I know my audience is really going to appreciate your insights. And my sincerest hope is that mayors of other cities across the U.S. and governors will sit up and take notice and insist that we shut down that border. Thank you very much.
Thank you.